Welcome to Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have your company this morning. Within the field of law enforcement, bounty hunting exists at one end of the bell curve, well, except in Wisconsin, where it currently doesn't exist at all. That might have changed in the current budget were it not for the veto pen of Governor Scott Walker. But bounty hunting still has some chance of becoming legal in Wisconsin. While Walker twice vetoed that proposal in the state budget, he says he would consider it as separate legislation. To explore what bounty hunting in Wisconsin might look like, Lake Effect's Amy Kiley spoke with Derek Nelson. He's the president of the Bail Bond Association of Minnesota. He also works as a bond agent, issuing money for bail, and as a bounty hunter, tracking down fugitives.
Essentially, what a bail bond agent is no different than an insurance agent. They provide a guarantee to the courts that a defendant is going to appear at no cost to the taxpayer. So for instance, if a defendant were to abscond, they were to run, and a warrant was issued, that bail bond agent would be charged with the accountability to bring that individual, that defendant, back into custody. A bondsman would then at that point go and either recover that person, bring them back into custody, or utilize the services of a recovery agent, or more known term is the bounty hunter, to bring that person back into custody. And then at that point, they would get themselves off of the bail. And how the bondsmen find these recovery personnel varies from state to state. Some have to be licensed. They have to maintain a certain level of accreditation and training. Other states do not have those requirements. So it ultimately falls on the responsibility of the bail bond company to ensure that they have the proper professionals finding these individuals and bringing them back into custody. And if that is not done, then the bail bond company is ultimately held liable.
Could allowing bond agencies to operate in Wisconsin enable potentially dangerous defendants to more easily or affordably get out of jail? And could that be dangerous, like some critics are saying?
A lot of critics believe that bail bondsmen could lead to these dangerous and violent offenders getting out of custody. In a lot of respects, and in my experience as well, there's a lot of defendants that will further respect being on a bail bond and the bail bond agent's requests and demands for instance, checking in, returning to court, making sure they're not going out there and recommitting new crimes or violating their terms of release, because they know at any point in time that bondsman can work with the courts, have their bail pulled, and they'll be back in custody.
What is that experience like as a bounty hunter going after a fugitive on the run?
It's nowhere near as exciting as what some would make it look or appear on TV. There's a lot of long nights working with law enforcement all hours of the day, all hours of the night. And sometimes it requires sitting on a house for 4 or 5 days straight. All of this is with law enforcement's knowledge that we're operating in those areas. It's never advisable, it's never wise in any way, shape, or form when we're operating on an investigation to just roll into a city or roll into a county or any state without them knowing we're operating. It creates liability for us, and it creates liability for any officer that may feel that they need to get involved if a situation were to occur.
Do you want to use a story that was especially interesting or risky or something like that and walk us through how you caught the fugitive?
We at one point in time, we were looking for an individual in the central Minnesota area. And when we originally received the case, it was on drug charges and possible firearm possession charges. And at that point, the first step was we made contact with the court administrator. We've discovered, was there any other cases in any other counties at the same time? And if so, we speak to those counties as well. Then we do a criminal background check. We pull their criminal record to see what is their formal record. You know, is there a substantial history of drugs, of violence, of theft? And for this particular individual, it was drug crimes, not really violent crimes, just specifically drug crimes. Our next step was to make communication with the local law enforcement of those areas of known residences. And we acquire that information off of the bail bond application, which is the documents they complete before they're released from custody. And using that information, we're able to identify what law enforcement agencies we need to contact. And upon contacting them, we discover that he has a substantial history of contact with law enforcement, whether it's been they've pulled him over recently, they've had to break up fights at local bar establishments. It's from that information we were able to kind of pinpoint where this individual was. But unfortunately, we didn't have an exact address. He was knowingly running from law enforcement. He was knowingly running from the courts and had no intention of being found. And we actually did receive reports from people that we did encounter that he was trying to acquire as much money as he could so he could actually leave state. And as a result, we were able to find information from different past associates, past relatives, past friends. And from that information, we were able to find he's either in one area of one city or one area of another. And what resulted is almost 72 hours straight of living in our car, sitting on addresses, floating through different neighborhoods, and at the same time working with local law enforcement. So they knew not only where we were, but the areas we were looking in. So they too, during their standard patrols and their standard operations, could also keep their eyes open. And what ultimately happened is while we were sitting on these properties, we noticed that a very suspicious looking individual was also driving around in a vehicle, and we proceeded to follow that vehicle. We notified law enforcement what type of vehicle we were following, the license plate, and while following that vehicle, we saw it pull into a driveway that was significantly hidden behind bushes and shrubbery. And sure enough, we saw our defendant exit the back of a barn, walking towards the house across the property. And at that point, we were able to make contact. And it wasn't a big elaborate, we jump out of the car running at him, yelling or screaming or anything like that. It was simply, I had one vehicle pull behind him. I pulled in front. I stepped out and I said, you are under arrest. You missed court. I identified who I was. And he went, oh, shoot. There was no fight. There was no struggle. There hardly ever is. We brought him into custody. We placed him under arrest, and we gave him an opportunity to say goodbye to whoever it was that it was there. I believe it was like a friend or a girlfriend or something. And then we took him out to the jail. And at the jail, we surrendered him to one of the jail staff there. And that's typically how a lot of these cases work, is a lot of sitting, a lot of waiting, a lot of talking to people and working with law enforcement. And then once we find the person, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they just throw their hands up and say, okay, you caught me.
What happens in that 1 time out of 10 okay. when violence is necessary in some way?
Essentially what happens at that point is the recovery agent will be directed by law enforcement, or if necessary, will use something like mace or a taser, whatever's legally allowable in that state. And then also with the proper training and licensing, they'll be able to use those bits of equipment. I'd say in almost 5 years of doing recoveries, I've maybe had to use a taser once, and I had law enforcement present. And it was an unfortunate incident. The individual was very unruly. And once the taser was deployed, law enforcement took him into custody after that. And at that point, it was considered that I had successfully brought my defendant back into custody.
Have you ever lost a lot of money because a fugitive got away?
I have not personally lost a lot of money from a fugitive necessarily getting away. It does happen from time to time. It happens to the best of them, whether you're security, whether you're law enforcement, whether you're doing fugitive recoveries. There is that very off chance, rare occasion that somebody's going to be a lot faster, a lot stronger, and a lot more familiar with an area than you are. And what happens in those unique situations where somebody is actually able to get away or they're able to run, at that point, they don't have anywhere else to go. They're on foot. They typically don't have their wallet with them. And even if they do, it's limited amounts of cash. They don't have their clothes with them. And at that point, if you don't have that relationship and that communication going with law enforcement, you're kind of stuck. You're kind of stranded. There was one particular incident where we did have a defendant jump out of a window that we were not aware even existed. It was kind of a flap of siding that lifted up, and he jumped out of that. And we went after him. We notified law enforcement. They sent several officers out to help us look. And we weren't able to find him necessarily immediately. And about an hour and a half later, we get a phone call from a law enforcement officer saying, hey, we have your guy in custody. He walked into the bank and was going to try to withdraw money out of his account. We saw him walking across the street.
Wow.
So it does happen from time to time, and when it does, it's that communication, that relationship with law enforcement and working with them that really resolves the situations quickly and safely. Otherwise, you're left looking for this person, and you have no assistance, and that's not safe for anybody involved.
If Wisconsin passes a bounty hunting law and separate legislation, as the governor mentioned, might be possible, will you start tracking fugitives into Wisconsin then?
Well, actually, we currently do. Not in the sense that you would think. Occasionally, we will have defendants that will, for instance, they'll abscond and they'll run from Michigan, and they'll run from Minnesota, they'll run from Iowa, they'll run from states that do have commercial bail bonds. And what happens at that point is we cannot effectively go into Wisconsin and find these guys and bring them back into custody. Not only is it illegal, but it's a real good way for us to get charged with felony kidnapping and a whole host of other charges. However, if the warrant is extraditable and it is recognized as extraditable, then we can contact and communicate with law enforcement in that area, provide them with information as we acquire it so they can work with us and they can help get that person back into custody. And once they're brought back into custody, then it goes into the hands of the court of Wisconsin. The only difference that would happen with Wisconsin if commercial bail bonds is passed is instead of law enforcement going in and finding these defendants or finding these fugitives, we would be able to be a lot more hands-on. We'd actually be able to go into those cities. We'd be able to sit the long hours on the houses. We'd be able to acquire that information from the local law enforcement and float around different areas, go sit in the bars, go sit in the family restaurants or the movie theaters for hours on end, and just simply watching and waiting.
Derek Nelson, thanks for talking about bounty hunting here on Lake Effect.
You're welcome. You have yourself a wonderful day.
You too.
Derek Nelson is president of the Bail Bond Association of Minnesota. He's also owner of Guardian Fugitive Recovery, LLC, and manager of A Alliance Bail Bonds. He spoke with Lake Effect's Amy Kiley about what bounty hunting in Wisconsin might look like if lawmakers permitted it. Coming up next, a memoir by a local psychiatrist combines poetry and stories to tell the story of a long and productive life in medicine. We'll chat with Dr. Barry Blackwell next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.